I am pleased to introduce Lorenza, I'm sorry, from Iowa as our first speaker. Please help me give her a warm welcome.
Thank you, William. Woo! I'm an addict. My name is Lorenza. So glad to be here. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me? Oh, thumbs up in the back. I'm trying to chill out and be like cool because I'm nervous as all get out right now. But I know God's got this, so I'm going to just chill and just loosen up because I came from San Diego, born and raised. Woo, Dago in the house, right? And I'm real grateful for this opportunity to share a little bit of me with you. Because I already know that a little bit of you is already in me. That's what I find out around here. And there's a lot of stuff I want to tell you today. And how much time do I have to squeeze it in? 30
minutes.
Excuse me?
30 minutes.
30 minutes. I can do that. Right. I'm just going to give you little bits and pieces. Take my will and my life. Guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live. And let me share with others what's been freely given to me. I can't hardly hear me. Let me talk up. Shoot, I didn't come around here to be all timid. Time equals miracles. Recovery equals life. This was the last token my sponsor gave to me this past year. My clean date is February 11th, 1995, and for that I am truly grateful. Yes, yes, thank you, God. And I will talk about God because God is the reason why I'm here before you. That's how I got here, because God, that I didn't have any understanding about other than one that I heard about or thought was in another realm that would never touch me as far down as I went. Let me back up a bit. I was going to go up to my room at about 9:45 and get my last mug shot. Okay? Because it will take, I tell you, 15 minutes off of my share. I was picked up on January 11th, 1995, off the streets where I was very comfortable. See, I came from the alleys and byways of San Diego. I lived in an area that we called Crack Central. And that was no joke. It was around New Jack City time. And it was truly like New Jack City. It was lawless for real. And I loved it. And I knew that was going to be where I would die. But the grace of a loving God decided that I was going to go to jail one more time. Because there had been many times before. And I'd go there and I'd grab a Bible and I'd grab a pillow and I'd settle in. Then when they released me, I'm back on the streets doing what I really needed to do because I needed to catch up. I needed to. But the last time I went to jail, I was sitting in that cell doing my usual thing and kicking it with the homegirls. And H and I came in. And I got a message of hope. Because I'd been to so many different churches and I tried this, that, and the other, and nothing worked. But when I heard those women give me that, hearing other people's experiences, and they shared about, oh, no, you didn't. He loved this. Squirrel. That was a test. I know it was. We got this thing about squirrel. I'm a squirrel. I'm going to tell you now. I will go here and I will go there, but you're going to have to just keep up. I know you will. Now, where was I? So these women came in and they shared their experience, strength, and hope. And they had shared about being out in those alleys and in those abandoned buildings and jumping in and out of cars and doing whatever they had to do for the next one. And I could relate. That was me. But then they flipped it because we didn't want to talk about that kind of street out on that stuff out on the streets. We all knew what was going on, but we didn't talk about it. And then they told me about how they had found a way out, how they had found a new way to live, and how they were in this program of recovery where they weren't ashamed of all that stuff anymore, and they weren't hopeless, and they weren't full of shame and guilt and remorse and all those things I knew so well. And I heard about this program, and I started to believe that if they could do it, I could do it too. See, I couldn't believe I could stay clean by what I learned in church. They loved me, but they didn't understand me. See, y'all understand me. And so when I got out of that, that 23-day incarceration, I went straight to the VA Medical Center, to that other place on the hill around the corner, because I'm a veteran. And I was getting loaded. As a matter of fact, I was getting loaded with somebody a few years prior, and he told me about this program in the middle of a hit. I'm like, oh, it didn't work for you. What makes you think it's going to work for me? Pass the pipe. But that information got stored right back here somewhere, and it came up when I needed it, because I had a little bit of clarity. I had 23 days, right? And so I knew where to go, and I went to that place, and they loved me, and they held me. And what is the topic of this? Really, what's the topic? And that's why I'm talking so much, I guess, about that incarceration, because one of the first things I felt when I was locked up on that Saturday night doing what I do, and I got into that cell, and I felt free. That was amazing. I couldn't believe it. I was out on the streets. I could do whatever I wanted to do, and I did what I wanted to do as a practicing addict, which was all bad. And when I was sitting there and by myself, just me, I felt free. And that's what I started holding on to. So by the time I got to that 28-day program, I just knew I was in the right place. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. This was my first time around. I'm like, okay, bring it on. I'm rested up now. And there was this nurse who was about this wide, and I was about this wide, and she would envelop me in her arms. Matter of fact, I would stand at her office door and wait for her to come to work so she could hug me. And I'm still practicing those hugs 25 years later. I give good hugs, I tell you, because when I give one, I'm getting one back. I get to break the chains of loneliness and isolation and degradation and fear and resentment and fear. Did I say fear? I want to tell you that I spent my first, what was that? I want to tell you that I spent my first 22 years in the other fellowship. And thank you. And I want to tell you, I sat in these seats for the first 22 years feeling like I didn't belong. But what they told me was keep coming back. Now, see, I'm a good addict, because if it's going to give me what I want, I'm going to do it. I'm a chameleon. I do that real well. I'll do whatever I got to do to get what I need. That's the kind of addict I am. And so I sat in those seats for 22 years. And the chains started falling away, but yet I still had this little gnawing feeling that I just don't belong here. But it was keeping me clean, and I started getting happy, joyous, and free. And I felt like I belonged in other places. See, I felt like I belonged in my skin, and I really needed that. And I would come visit y'all, and I know a lot of people in my community that are in Narcotics Anonymous, and they had that little extra sum that I'm like, well, I want some of that. And then I had a sponsor who did a hybrid. We did both programs, and that kind of introduced me to more of a y'all's ways of thinking and doing and believing and living. And now the sponsor that I have today is a soldier. My sponsor is a soldier. My home group is living clean on Sunday morning. And I have another home group, Saturday Morning Live. And they're in San Diego. And I thank God for the Zoom platform, because I still get to have a home group in my hometown. And I thank God for the fact that though most of us come here so broken and so wrapped up and tied up and chained up by the disease and the fear and the guilt and the remorse and the shame and all those things that keep us doing those things that we don't want to do anymore, but we have to keep doing them because, damn it, that's what we do. And a lot of times I didn't know why, but I had to do it because that's just what I do. And it made me feel better for a moment, but I'd have to go back to that same thing over and over. And I'm real, real grateful to hear the speaker last night talk about this being a love story. And I want to thank you, my friend. This is his book. And I picked it up this morning and I started crying because I felt this book. And it's not just that it's a love story, but it's his love story. And he has notes and highlighting and, oh my gosh, and I put money up in here because this is like money, right? There's a couple spots that I marked with some money because this is money, new money. I wasn't planning on saying none of this stuff I'm saying, so y'all just hang with me, okay? I'm going to get around to whatever it is I plan to say. No, I won't. I'm going to say what God wants me to say. Hello? The last convention, and yes, I'm going to jump around, so just hang with me, okay? The last convention I went to was MACNA. And it was my first time. And I met this beautiful woman named Mo. And she told me that y'all was going to have your first convention. I'm like, shucks, I ain't never been to a first convention. I've been to a lot of conventions, not the first. And then when I got back home, and it was in March, and everything just shut down, and the world was turned on his, I don't know what, on his ass? I don't know. I couldn't find toilet paper. I couldn't find paper towel. I was just, what's going on? Right? I had this beautiful weekend in Yuma, and then I go home, and everything's just crazy, and I'm like, wow. And I made plans for other places. I was going to go to a regional convention in Hawaii, and it got canceled. I went to Hawaii anyway. I was going to go on a NA cruise out of Puerto Rico, and I had to cancel those plans and try to get most of my money back. They gave me some back. That's all right. But I was all these things I loved to do just got shut down, and it was like I was chained up again. And I could relate to the young lady who spoke earlier about being locked up by her career. And I had that experience. At 18 years, my career meant everything to me, and recovery was over there somewhere, and it almost took me out. My ego stepped in, and that is another chain around here. See, what I've come to believe and know in thinking about the topic is I had to think about the topic before at least I have some kind of guideline to go by. But I knew when I got here, I was just going to say whatever comes out my mouth, like I do. But I knew that I needed to kind of keep some type of framework. And that's why I started this with my jail thing, and I didn't go back to my past, and we all got all that stuff. I was actually, no, that's part of it too, because I'm the youngest of seven, and my mom and dad were in the house at all. My mom was a homemaker. My dad worked hard to make sure that his family was taken care of, and I had six brothers and sisters, and they all decided for me what was right for me. And I, from a very young age, I always wanted to please them and do whatever they wanted me to do. And then I left my father's house and went to my husband because I had to get out of that house. And I jumped like from the frying pan into the fire because my husband was just like my father who decked. He bought the clothes I wore and the food that I ate. I had no rights. I had nothing. But I was married. And he told me to join the army. I said, okay. Okay. And I tell you this because I was bound up by all these chains of what other people had for me. And I could never really think for myself. And then I went from my husband to the army. I went from the army to the disease of addiction who told me what to do. And then I went from there into a career that told me what to do. And it's just that I had a couple of relationships, and I based what I did on those relationships, and I never had the freedom where it really counted to make decisions for myself. And I really thank God because it taught me what I don't want and what I don't really need, because it was based on what I needed. See, being a spoiled young lady and an addict from a very young age, it was all about me. It was that self-obsession. It was like, I'm going to get what I need, and it don't matter what you think or say, just give me what I need. And I existed like that for a long time. And I got lost, and I by the time I became an adult and I got clean, it's like, okay, now I have the program. And what I'm finding in this new freedom, and I get to pull back layers, and I'll go this way and I'll come this way, but I get right centered because it's a framework for living, and it helps me to stay grounded because I still have this disease in here somewhere that's still out to get me, and it keeps trying. Oh, it's good. It's working right now. Because I'm thinking over here, oh, I'm so off track, and they're going to get up and leave. See, right here, right now, in this second, I'm being locked up by my disease, who wants to make me fail, and they don't understand what you're saying, so you might as well shut up and sit down. Right now. See, that's how powerful the disease of addiction is, and I am stone cold clean, and my disease is still at it. Y'all. So let me bring myself back to where I want to be right now, which is on topic. And it's very, very important that I know that there are chains, even if it's in my mind, there are chains that I need to break. And I can break those chains. I don't have to be bound by other people, what they think about me, what they say about me, what they want to. I don't know. Let me fast forward because I want to make sure that I do cover what I really want to talk about, and that's today. Where am I today in my recovery? But I'm going to have to go back to, say, maybe, I don't know, I think I'm going to go back to October. So in October, I made a decision all by myself. I made a decision. Because I was suffering in my career, and I didn't want to be there anymore, and I'd been like that for a long time. I was locked up in that because of the money and the prestige, and because that's what I do. And I didn't want to be there because it was like I forgot why I was there, so I was burnt out. And the God of my understanding, I recognize, like the time when my mom was about to depart this earth, and she went through all my craziness with me, and she never let me go. But when she was about to depart this earth, I got to spend her last day with her. Nobody but God knew she was leaving that day. Just like that time when I heard that little voice, and I moved on it. So this little voice says, you need to go back to school. Actually, somebody came and recruited me. And that's how I ended up in Iowa. I didn't even know I was recruited. That's how clueless I was. I'm like, okay, I'll go. It'll get me out of here. And so I packed up everything, and I retired from the long career with those people that I didn't want to be with, but really, I don't know. And I moved everything to Iowa, and I didn't even know where Iowa was until I moved there. Cold there. Yeah, it is. Hell yeah, it's cold there. And they said it ain't really got cold yet. Just hang around. Wait till December, January, but that's all right. I'll wait. Because I love it there. Mm-hmm. Just like when I was sitting in jail feeling free. It's here. It's here. It's my attitude. It's my attitude about my life and where I belong. And I can be anywhere and be cool with it. I'm right? That's part of recovery. For me, because what I have is not based on anything external anymore, right? That's breaking the chain for real, breaking the chains, because it's not about me picking up any mood-altering drug or thing, or you see where I'm going with that, because it's the disease of addiction. So it's not even about that anymore. It's about me making sure that I keep breaking the chains that bind me in my head, which causes me to act and to react and to do things that I really don't want to do because they're not good for me. And so what I've come to find out in making that decision, and then I spoke to some people about it. And so I move out there I take that back. I'm not going to lie now. I did not try to connect because I had the Zoom platform. And I get to stay in San Diego while I'm sitting there. I thank God for people who can stay clean on this platform, because for me, I needed to be in the middle of the herd. When I went through that recovery home that I spent a year in, they taught me, sit your butt up front, because all that stuff going on behind you, you won't be distracted by it, because I'm a squirrel. I needed to be in front, or I need to be in the middle of the herd. Because what I know, and I collect elephants, trust and believe, I got a lot of elephants, and it's not just the elephants, but it's the meaning for me. If I'm in the middle of the herd, I'm in a better position, not only to stay clean, but to help the other people who are in the herd. I was somewhere before I came here. Hate when that happens. And I'm also old, and I've gone through menopause, and memory kind of comes and goes, and I just try to rope it back. I may spin around, but I'll come back eventually. I am so grateful. I am so happy. I am so full of joy, because joy cannot be taken from me. It's something that when I wake up in the morning, I make sure everything's still working first. And I say, thank you, God, for another day. And then I'll stretch. And I can touch my toes today. I stretch. And I just throw it out there. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready. And whatever happens in that day, happens in that day. And I get to deal with it. Sometimes I get to deal and heal. Sometimes there's a reveal and then a deal and then a heal. But it's always something new. That's why I'm excited. I'm as excited now as I was when I got here, and I never want to let that go. Because so many people drop off. Complacency, boredom. I've been there, done that. Oh my gosh, this has been taped. Dang, I hate when that happens. Because there's things you don't hear on here that you get to experience and hear. Before we got clean, most of our actions were guided by impulse. Today, we are not locked into this type of thinking. We are free. So I get to change my mind on a daily, minutely. So I decided to move to Iowa because I'm going to go get my PhD because of the prestige. I didn't think about it because they let me in. They said, we want you at that university that's prestigious, top ranked. And I get there without, you know, early in recovery, they used to tell me to play the tape out. I didn't play the tape out. I retired from this. I gave myself 2 weeks to move, and I jumped into that. And I'm still spinning. And then I started feeling it here, and I started doing what they expected me to do, and I started feeling those chains binding me again, and I started feeling like, and thank God for recovery and my strong sponsor and my grand sponsor who hold me, and my sister, my sisters, my family tree. And if you don't have a family tree that you're in touch with, oh, please do that. Get in touch with your sponsees, your sponsor, your grand sponsor, those people who are there for you, your community, recovery, man, because they have helped me to start breaking some of those chains that are keep me locked up in the disease. Stone cold clean. And so now my health is kind of being affected, and I'm still pushing through and doing what I need to do. Thank you very much. Because I don't need to be bound up by resentment, anger, and fear, because those are definitely chains that I need to break and continue to break, because they keep cropping up whenever they can. So let me tell you where I am today. I got 5 minutes, four and a half, 4 minutes and 25 seconds. I made a decision this time after consulting with some people that I trust, their advice. One of them being my advisor, who told me, she knew me through my graduate study. She said, I didn't think that was a good fit for you anyway. I said, why didn't you say something about that when I decided I was going to? She said, because you wanted to do it. But what I know today is that I needed to move from San Diego to Coralville, Iowa, to get what God has for me and to have those experiences. And I've had some really good experiences, but I'm not an online kind of girl. As you can probably tell, I need to be with you. That's how I operate. Well, let me take that back. I'm holding it down, but I don't want to. I got choices today. So what I've decided to do was to let it go. And the most difficult part of this letting it go was, how would people think about me? What would people think? Darn it, you couldn't do that doctorate program. But what I know today is that God has something else for me. And what I've been doing really in the last couple of weeks is just getting into meditation and prayer and being still. And I feel so free. Just like when I went through the steps. With each step, I was able to break the chains. With the surrender. With knowing I'm crazy and I need help. Turning it over to the God of my understanding. Writing that stuff down that I found so objectionable. And sharing it with somebody. With each one of those steps, I got to break some chains, shortcomings, humility, just like in this morning's readings about humility versus humiliation. I thought it was the same thing, but it's not. Shortcomings, character defects, they both mean the same thing, right? And then making that list, breaking those chains that I was all bound up in. I owe this, and I need to make this right, and making it right. And then with the maintenance, 10, 11, and 12, just staying on it. Just staying on it. I love the 11th step because it keeps me connected. It keeps me connected. And then when I get to 12, my friend's favorite step is sharing that with other people. And most of all, practicing it in all my affairs. I don't get just to practice the 12th step in the rooms or in recovery. I practice it with my family, whose lives I'm in today. I get to practice it when I was working with my employer and my coworkers. I get to practice it with others in recovery. I get to practice it now as a student. Well, almost ex-student. I'm still haven't told my advisor yet, but he'll find out once he calls me back. But what I know today, for sure, what I know today is that I am an addict in recovery, not just from active addiction and using and all that stuff, but I am in recovery from my life, because like I've heard and I know, my disease was there before I even picked up. I just learned how to practice it in different ways that took me out of myself. I stand on solid ground today. That feels good. I am going to, after this meeting, go on a bike ride. That is freedom for me. It gives me exercise, a spiritual connection, because I'm out there in nature, and a couple other things. But I found so many ways to break the chains. So many ways to feel okay, or no, to feel good in my skin. Because if I'm not comfortable in my skin, what's the point? That's why I used in the first place. I get to be among you I'm so grateful for this convention, and as I heard earlier, and I know for me too, I needed this. I have a custom-made mask. I got money. I got the word, this love story that I really, from this moment on, I'm really going to look at it as a love story. That was such a revelation for me last night. I love you all. I thank you so much for being here for me, and I'm going to keep coming back.
All right, let's give Lorenza another round of applause. Our second speaker from Bullhead City. Bullhead City? Jack Bean. Let's give him a welcome. Hello.
How y'all doing? Before I get started, I want to tell you there's two white bags over there. I'd like you to pass one around this side of the room and one around this side of the room, and I'd like you to put all your valuables in it. And it kind of fits the topic, breaking the chain, you know. So now I can tell you who I am, so that no 911 calls, please. I am an addict, and my name is Jack. And I don't like this whole mask thing. So what I'm going to talk about is in breaking the chains is for me and for you, because part of what I believe I'm doing being here today is hopefully saying something that somebody will get that will make a change in their life. And is that a 5-minute warning?
Yes, sir.
Good, because I need that. You know, huh? So, like I said, I'm an addict. My name's Jack. I'm 70 years old. My clean date is 7/13/1990. And, thank you. I am here because I was just truly tired of the way my life was going, and I'm a very slow learner. My first arrest was in 1968. I got involved in a program called Impact because my parents weren't going to let me come home, and I went to my first meeting in end of 1968, 1969, and I did not get clean until 1990, and I was in and out, in and out, in and out. And it's about not breaking the chains. I got a little time clean. I found a chick, you know? And for you ladies, that's who I'm talking about. And I know ladies do the same thing. And I would fade off into the sunset, happily ever after. And I'd get a few days clean, and I'd be good. I'd get detoxed, and I would feel a little better, and I could hang out with the old people. And I would justify that with they respect me. They get high in the other room, but these are my people. And come to find out, like 21 years later, in and out and in and out, They addicts are my people, but that just wasn't the group of people that was helping me change my life. And towards the end of that, I had an extensive arrest history, and I always thought stuff like, it's okay, they're rescuing me from myself. I'll do a little time, I'll get out, I'll be healthy, and I can take off again, you know, running. And my last two arrests, the second to the last, was they offered me a plea bargain, 15 to life. And thank God I was smart enough to say no. And I told the attorney, I can do this myself, you know. And we beat the case on a legal technicality, and I went out and still got arrested again. I'm talking about being a slow learner because I was going to do things differently. And what happened, things got so bad. I did a geographical. My parents moved to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I needed to get away from California, where I was running amok, and I went there, and things were going to be different, and nothing changed. Nothing changed, and it says in our literature that if we do geographicals, we take ourselves with us. So the reason I'm saying this, anybody's thinking about moving, be in recovery if you're not ready to change. I got this thing. We're staying at an RV park over on the other side of what I'd call somewhat Prescott. I don't know. I got in the car to come here this morning, and I have navigation, and where I grew up, roads went this way and this way. I'm telling you, I tried to get here in time for my friend Ray speaking, and Prescott confused my navigation. So I get in here and I have to unwind, and I was always taught if you're a little nervous, start with how you're feeling or a joke, and I want to thank you. You did a great job sharing, and you really confused the shit out of me. Because of who I am, I have not put much thought into this since Tommy asked me to do this, because I know how that goes, and I got stuff going on in my life. And all this stuff you're saying, little things are popping up. Ooh, I could say that, you know. And the bottom line is, I need to be here. My life, I remember when a parole officer said, it's back to prison, or you got to get on methadone. And I got on a methadone clinic, and when I was getting processed in, the doctor told me, you are the youngest person we've ever had on the methadone clinic. And I'm like, here's how I look at this. Cool. You know, because I wanted to be those people that run amok. It's just who I became, and it's who I thought I was going to be for the rest of my life. And I looked at things differently, and it's justification and rationalization for our behavior. When I did the geographical, and I moved to Pennsylvania in 1986, I got there, and I had a little money in my pocket because my folks had sent it to me for the trip, and I was in town 30 minutes, and I know what you look like, and I did what we do. And when navigation screwed up and lost me at the bottom of the hill, I'm like, well, I'm going to take that road up and come up in here and turn around. I pull in here, and there you are, standing out front smoking. And I'm like, well, I'm home. This is the right place, you know. And I need to be here, and I need to do this. And I have a sponsee that celebrated 2 years a couple of weeks ago, and he told me, and he shared that, I don't know what I would do without Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know who I would be. And that is special to me to hear somebody say that. The things that have happened here to me in my life have changed it immensely. I'm the guy that when I was using, and if I went to your house and you peeked out the blinds, they wouldn't just be quiet. They'd say, nobody's home, because people didn't want to hang out with me. I'm the guy that if I had the bag and people would come to pick up, I would be willing to kick them down to get them to hang out with me because I was so lonely. And they'd say, no thanks, we have to go. And I just thought that it started to wear on me, and it would sadden me. And it just before I got clean, I got a job. And I was working at a sawmill in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And I'd lost my home, my parents. It was really fucked up what they did. They went to Naranon. And they stopped enabling me. And I'm telling you, I've always had an enabler, and without one, it is so lonely. I had to, it's bad, man. And if you're probably laughing, Lynn, because you've been there. I started to hate even more what I had become. And here's how this works, though. I still got this addiction telling me it's okay. I had this old Jeep that had a ragtop, you call it, I guess, a convertible or the top up. It had lines shredded through it. And I'm working at this sawmill, and at the end of the day, I'd get in the Jeep and I'd go look for a spot to park, and I would get a quart of Old English 800 and a pickle out of the barrel, you know, them real sour pickles. And this was my nutrition for the day. And I would park this Jeep, and I had all my belongings in it. And it's funny because I recognize Bullhead City is full of people with all their belongings in their vehicles. And it's like if I was a cop, I'd pull that one over, you know. Let's clean up the streets. But I had all my shit in this Jeep. I'd find a spot to park. I'd make this little bed between the front seat and the back between all the stuff. And I had a sleeping bag. And I had a plastic sheet I would put over me because it rains a lot there. And in the wintertime, it gets pretty cold. And then it becomes freezing rain. And it would drip through on me, and it would freeze over the shape of my body. For real. I'm still like, yeah, this is the life, because I grew up in the 60s, peace, love, rock and roll, you know, we can do whatever we want. The addiction said, yeah, this is good, man. I don't have to pay rent. I have a job. I got to tell you, part of breaking the chain is getting a job. But I got this little job before I could clean. I never worked till I was 40 years old. I told my wife that, and she never said much. And one day I came home from work, and she goes, I thought you'd been lying to me. And I'm like, you know, because we do that little, like, making stories up shit. I was 40 years old, and Social Security sends you a letter telling you how much you're worth if you retire. And she goes, you never fucking worked. And well, it didn't fit into the lifestyle. But see, being the addict that I was, now I want to argue. Okay? I'm like, that's a damn lie. Look right there. I made $300 that year. And the point I'm trying to make is we believe our own bullshit. And I have to remember that. And I do things today to remind me of that. I listen to you. I listen to my friends. I have friends in the room now. And I spend time with my friends. And it's all part of breaking the chain. And my message, or anybody else's message here, is if we do this, I don't see anybody that's been around a little while going, man, life's really fucked up. I got to change this shit. Or if they got to change it, they got to start going to more meetings or whatever, not go out and start using. And I have noticed that when people come back from relapse, I have this tendency, and some people get really pissed off, but I'm like, so tell me, is it getting any better out there? Because if it is, maybe I could come out and hang out with you. And they're like, you're fucking with me, right? And I'm like, yeah. Because we come back here because it's not getting better. And we do this because we want a life, and we do this because we learn how to do things here. Interesting thing, all my people from our area know this, but I never had a hard time catching a chick. For real, you know? And I needed you. I needed somebody to do my laundry, you know, do that other stuff we do, hang out and take care of me. I needed a mom is what I needed. And I would do that, and then of course I wouldn't get involved in recovery anymore, and my whole life was a lie because maybe they used, maybe they didn't, usually it was 6 months to a year or two, they would kick me to the curb. And then I became a victim. Why would you do this to me? And after I got clean and did some step work and looked at my life, and I have to ask myself why it took them 6 months, you know? And I understand sometimes I probably preyed on codependent women, but how much time I got left? Huh? 15? Okay. So I do this because I need to do this. I do this because it makes me feel good. I'm the social butterfly in our family. My wife, she's okay, but she's not like me everywhere, you know. I like people, and I like to do things. I like conventions. And I told you I was 70. I just forgot where I was going. Okay. So,
social butterfly.
Yeah. Okay. I now, thank you, Ray. In 1990 was my last rehab, and I met my wife in rehab. And they put me in the chronic relapse group. And in men's group, we did a lot of stuff identifying who we were and what we've been through and where we could go. And so I met this woman in rehab. And they sent her to Allentown, Pennsylvania to live where I was at the time. And we started hanging out, and it happened. And I actually liked her, you know. And I had a sponsor at the time, and I was going to meetings daily. And I decided maybe this is what I wanted to do with my life, the direction I wanted to go. And What I figured out I needed to do, I needed to break that chain of 6 months to a couple of years, and I needed to get involved in recovery, and I needed to be about something and about the partnership and understand relationships aren't 50-50. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're 30-70, sometimes they're 70-30. And we talked about it, and we needed to have our own personal recovery. And here we are. We've been together 30 years. Huh? And thank you. And it's not something I want to fuck with, you know. And my last convention, our last convention, my wife and I and my friends, we all ride our bikes from Bullhead down to Yuma every year. And we got down there, and they're wearing masks, and I'm like, man, this is a little creepy. And people are doing this, you know. And I remember, well, this ain't gonna be that bad. And we went home, and my wife does the shopping because I am not good in a store. And she went shopping after we got home, and she come home and she was crying. And I'm like, what's the matter? And I really got to ask, because I can't even make her cry. And I could be pretty obnoxious, but she was crying. I'm like, what's the matter? And she goes, there was no toilet paper. And that was the weekend this all started. And what has happened since then has affected me very much. I believe I've been depressed. I believe I, being the social butterfly, I'm not out with my friends, and I got friends I hang out with, a few that are close, and I make a joke about it. I'm like, give me a hug. I know where your mouth has been. And still, we have to be careful. And I have to say that because we have to be careful. In Bullhead, when they said, slow down on what you're doing, a couple renegades, we have them in NA. They kept the outdoor meeting going, with no masks and no this and that, and kept going the whole time. And I have a sponsee that was part of that. And I said, Paul, I shouldn't have done that. I said, Paul, you still live with your parents. And he said, yeah. And I said, so what if you're exposed and you went home and you killed your parents? How would you feel? And that's the kind of stuff I learned here, to think outside of the box. That's the kind of stuff I never thought about. Never thought about. Because the disease, still today, it's truly all about me. And I need to think ahead. I need to look ahead. I need to be an example of what we do here. And it's hard sometimes. So I'm home. I'm retired. I'm home. And my wife comes home and she says, what did you do today? And I'm like, I emptied the trash. And thank God for premium stations on satellite or cable. I'm like, she goes, you watched the Western Channel all day, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah. But then I say, because I'm an addict, you're the lucky one. And she says, really? I said, you have a job, man, and I'm retired, and I actually miss my job. And when I retired, I let my credentials expire, and I wish I hadn't. But, you know, so I do things to keep in proper mindset. And I've been doing this even before the COVID started, but I get up every morning, I get a cup of coffee, I would turn on the news, and I don't watch the news as much anymore because it's just like different. I can't talk about politics because I've been told that. Okay, so I don't watch the news. I watch something on TV. I have my coffee. I pick up my cell phone and I text at least 80 people good morning. And then underneath it has a cactus because I'm from Arizona. A little sun happy face and the little blue diamonds three times there, our service symbol. And it makes me feel good because it occupies time. It helps me feel good because usually out of the 80, at least 60 return, sometimes more, sometimes a little less. And they do stuff that we do that I was never used to anybody doing when I was using. They say, how's your day? How's your weekend? How's the family? Those that have come out to visit goes, how Ray? How Stephanie? You know, and it starts little conversations, texting, or it leads into a phone call because I don't like texting. And if I voice text, people possibly could assume I'm high because I don't proofread it before I hit send. And when I got the TV on or somebody else talking, it happens all the time. I'm voice texting. My wife comes in and starts talking to me and I'm like, and I hit send and I got both of our conversations in there. And the whole point is I need to do this today. And I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it for anybody else that listens. I go and make sure that meetings are open because newcomers need us. And it saddens me when I see people with time fade off into the sunset happily. Because it says in our literature, we can only keep what we have been given so freely by giving it away. And that doesn't mean I tell you how to do it. It means I show up and I lead. That's maybe not the best term. It's all about example. Guy 70, guy's life's changed, it's getting better. And I know I'm getting close, so I'm going to end on son. I have a son who's 27 years old, and when the COVID started in March, Nevada shut the casinos down, and I think this was a mistake, or at least if it wasn't a mistake, I would have liked to see them add a little money to my Social Security retirement too. But he was getting $600 a week unemployment. And he had this girlfriend, and that's all I'll say. And she was getting the same. And I don't know if he started using a little before that or just then, but he has been running amok since then. And this is part of breaking the chain. I have to do today what my parents did for me. And my wife and I weren't big enablers, but if he called today and said, I need a ride to rehab, I have some friends that would, boom, he'd be in like that. Because I worked in treatment for 26 years, and I have friends in recovery that do the same. And I just went a period where I hadn't heard from him for 4 weeks. And he's become me. He's using the same drug of choice I was using. It's a drug of choice that kills people. They overdose. They go to jail. They go to prison. I didn't hear from him for 4 weeks. And I don't obsess on it, but it's there. I wake up in the morning. I turn my phone off at night because I don't want to get that call that he's dead. Okay? And I wake up in the morning and I look at my phone, and there's no call, and I that helps me believe he's still alive, because the police would at least call or somebody. And so I don't hear from him for 4 weeks. And last Friday, just before home group, I get a phone call, and it's a friend of ours in recovery that works at the Riverside in the poker room where my kid worked. He lost his job during the course of all this. And she goes, I have somebody here that wants to talk to you. And she hands the phone off, and it's my son. And he says, I just want to let you know I'm still alive. Okay, here goes the addict in me. What do you really want? And it's a shame that I have to feel that way, but he has programmed me to that. I programmed my parents to that. And he talks a second, and he says, my car broke down on the parkway. We coasted down. I made a quick right. I pulled into Davis Camp, and it's sitting there. And they said that they're going to tow it tomorrow if it's not gone. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And the deal is, it's the last thing he had left. He had 2.5 years clean after he went to rehab, and he did very well, and he saved money. He was buying gold. He was buying silver. He's a very intelligent kid. Everybody that knows him knows that, and it's the last thing he has left. And I say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And what's he do? Because he's an addict. He hangs up on me. And went to home group and got home, and around 10 o'clock, the phone rings again, and it's him, and I'm like, what's up? I try to be nice, because I have a tendency of being, what the fuck? Leave me alone. And I try to be nice, and he says, I'm at the Riverside, and we have nowhere to stay, and we need a ride up to Riverwood. That is Laughlin's ghetto, okay, to find a place to stay. And it's cold out, and will you give us a ride? And I say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And this is part of breaking the chain. And Tommy pointed that out to me this morning, because we had talked about this. And the bottom line is, once again, I don't know where he's at. It's been a couple of weeks. And when we're coming up the hill out of Bullhead, and I mean the hill, you know. We go by Davis Camp, and I see his car still there. And of course, it just brings back more, because I have to think, maybe if they disimpounded the fucking car, that chick would leave him, and it's not her fault, but it doesn't help. And maybe it would be harder for him to continue his process of addiction. So what this is all about to me, this topic and what we do, is being examples for people, and not just for me, for our neighbors. First thing I do when I move into a neighborhood and somebody walks out with a beer, because they look and they see the motorcycles come out of the trailer, and have a beer. And I'm like, oh no, if I have a beer, I'll come back and rob your fucking house later tonight. And they look at me like I am out of my mind. But the bottom line is, okay, the bottom line is, if I have a beer, there's a good chance I'd try to do that. So I want to thank this committee for having me come share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank you for confusing me. And it was all good shit. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, once I start thinking, game over. And my wife will be here later today. She's at the campsite, the RV park, and we're going to limit our time here. And we have a dog with us that's getting old. And I just want to say, please, think about what's going on in the world today and take care of yourselves and stay healthy. And most of all, most important, be a good example and keep coming back. Thanks for having me.